We can call it techno-shamanism. What we're witnessing, in my opinion, in our time, is the resurgence of ancient knowledge being scrutinized by the lens of modern science and forcing our institutions with their established models and their dogmas and their doctrines to acknowledge that we may have been here before. This might not be our first time around the old civilization development block. You know, historical writings and theological texts and the Hermetic wisdom texts of Hermes Trismegistus, the ancient sage of Egypt, that speaks about, you know, the halls of Amenti, the secret records that exist underneath the Giza Plateau, which are supposedly meant to be these halls of records of the antediluvian time, the pre-flood era. And I find that to be incredibly fascinating. And the thing is that we know that there have already been massive discrepancies around, for example, the dating of the Sphinx on the Giza Plateau, which is primarily due to the water erosion around the Sphinx. This was first brought to our attention in the 90s by John Anthony West and Dr. Robert Schock. You know, their findings in relation to the water erosion imply the Sphinx, which, to be honest, is likely not a Sphinx at all and underwent changes through time, could actually go far as back as 10,500 BC. Which would mean the Sphinx predates the rise of dynastic Egyptian civilizations. Those are the ones that we're taught about in school by thousands of years. And there are many parts of Egypt that hint towards a different civilization, a different architectural style, a more advanced engineering skill set. And I'd actually say one of the most striking and obvious features of these more advanced and more ancient structures for the untrained eye, especially in relation to Egypt, is their complete and total lack of hieroglyphs, the pyramids being a prime example of this. I mean, I've been inside the tombs of the Valley of the Kings, and they're adorned in gold and artwork and colors and hieroglyphs. The pyramids, on the other hand, nothing. No symbols, no decorations, no references to be found in the Egyptian texts as to the construction of these pyramids. And that's because I don't think the Egyptians that we're taught about had anything to do with the construction of the Giza Plateau, the pyramids, or places like the Osirian in Abydos. But interestingly, many of these sites that contradict the architectural styles of dynastic Egypt actually match up with other prehistoric building projects around the world. So, you know, you've got the same cyclopean stone building processes, fitting massive stones together in perfect form without any mortar, without a binding agent. And this is a style that's found in Egypt. It's found in Peru, in Japan, in Russia, in Turkey, in Greece. And once again, I think this speaks to a lost period of history, a potentially globally connected period of human history, but also a vastly different period, despite the advancements that may even reflect a higher sophistication than some of our own breakthroughs today. They seem to have achieved these feats through an entirely different avenue of scientific knowledge. It seemed to bridge the gap between spirituality and science, a gap that we then widened in the post-cataclysm storyline that our history follows. Before this, though, I think we were very different, perhaps even close to a type one civilization, that we're using the energy of the planet, tapping into geothermal energy, geoenergetic materials, piezoelectric forces, electromagnetic forces, the Schumann resonance, telluric fault lines, literally using the planet how it's supposed to be used.
And Plato talked about Atlantis, and so did all these other ancient writings. And you're talking about basically an Atlantean civilization?
Well, I think so. I think that this is something that is implied by this shattered remnants of advanced architecture that seems to share similarities all over the world. I mean, we have to consider the fact that, you know, this cataclysm, this thing that we now understand as the Younger Dryas event, this huge cataclysm that took place across the world, would have completely destroyed the surface layer in most of the regions of the planet. The only things that are really surviving are these subterranean complexes and these shattered remnants above ground that we then scan and realize have got these incredibly vast systems. One example, like I said just a minute ago, is Abydos in Abydos. If anyone hasn't heard of the Osirian in Abydos, look that up. That is not Egyptian architecture. That is something entirely different. A kind of sunken temple And it's completely contradictory to the architecture of dynastic Egypt, and actually has more of a similarity to places like Sacsayhuaman and areas in Peru, these prehistoric cultures that had this incredible cyclopean stone building process where they stacked these stones and fitted them together. This is a shared architectural knowledge that seems to be echoed throughout prehistory, almost no matter where you go in the world.
All right. Again, what do people search again?
The Osirian Abydos. O-S-E-R-I-O-N.
Osirian Abydos. All right. Yeah.
Abydos. Yeah.
And I've researched a lot of this, but over time I forget it all. But I know you're more of an expert. The mainline Egyptologists are always claiming that the little junky pyramids that are tiny next to the three big ones, that, oh, those were earlier where they were learning how, but more and more scientists look at it and say, no, those are people trying to copy it. And if you look at all this around the world, you'll see these big giant things that doesn't look like any science we've got today could even build, scientists say. And then you'll see the later, newer stuff built to it that's just a ridiculous facsimile. And that really the little small pyramids are not the old pyramids. They're people trying to copy them later.
Yeah, I think so. I think it implies a copycat culture that was trying to get to the place that we once were. I mean, you talked about Plato and the story of Atlantis. Well, where we actually get the story of Atlantis from is from Plato's great-great ancestor. I think it's like his great-great-great-grandfather Solon, who was a sacred sage of ancient Greece. And he traveled to the city of Sais in ancient Egypt, and he spoke with the priests in the temples, and he wanted to talk about the antiquities. And this is where they gave him the story of Atlantis, because apparently the priests basically laughed at Solon and said, you Greeks don't have any comprehension of history. There have been many rises and falls before our time, before your time. And that's where the Atlantis story was actually originally given. It was given to Solon, who passed it down to Plato. And, this is one of the only times where we just kind of radically dismiss Plato as less of a historian and more of a, either a theologian or a kind of metaphor.
Well, remember, they thought where he said Troy wasn't there, and then they found that 20 years ago.
Precisely. And he was very specific with the geology of the area. And, there's some questions about where exactly that might be in the planet. There's a few different locations. But no, I think that we, this is such a radical upheaval in the status quo of history and archaeology. I think I know that you understand this, Alex, I think the implications run very deep into systemic control, into consciousness control, because if you can completely blank out this incredible, I would say, golden age of history on Earth, and we don't know that this is our history, we don't know that this is what we're building up from, I think that takes a lot away from us as a human species. And I think that there's a lot of powerful institutions that have a vested interest in keeping the antiquities very much under wraps when it comes to these things. But this is why a study like the one that's being done right now is so important, because it's this, it's a breakout of the status quo. It's a breakout of the model. And I'm very excited to see where it's all going to go.
And we know that Hitler was obsessed with it and hauled off a bunch
of
Babylonian ruins to Germany. We know that the Pergamon Gate, all of that. We know that the British Royal Museum is obsessed and won't let the public see hardly any of it. We know that I think a lot of stuff that was in the Library of Alexandria was actually somewhere else. The big question is how secretive they've been in Egypt for really 100 years, and the British involved heavily, keeping researchers out, not letting people look in all these areas. And then we have already found with other ground-penetrating radar that they did find all this other stuff that history said was there. Now as they go deeper, they find more and more and more and more and more. I think it's safe to say that the whole globalist shadow government has been in there and has been down in there and is using a lot of this information to build some of the advanced breakaway civilization they've got. I mean, I think it's a safe bet to say that folks finding this with ground penetrating radar that, that the bad guys are probably down in there right now.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you and I both have, done research into the black budget and technology and aerospace capabilities, you more than probably anyone else on the planet. So, the implications of off the books classified technology being deployed that's much further ahead than our own is extremely likely. And I'm sure they've done that research, and I'm sure they've done that analysis. And there's a vested interest to keep, the mainstream and the grassroots people like these individuals out of the picture.
The U.S. government and others have way more powerful ground penetrating radar to know where Iranian bases are, Russian bases, the Russians, the Chinese have these systems as well. So imagine what the government knows with satellites that are classified, but we know extremely powerful, that can just look into mountains, look into everything. Imagine what they found. Imagine what else is out there. Because as you said, there's all sorts of, all over Eastern Europe, all over the place, there are what people thought were mountains, and now they're scanning them, and they're actually pyramids that just have stuff growing all over them. I mean, what is going on with these pyramids?
Well, I think that this is speaking to a pyramid culture of some form. And one of my research avenues into prehistoric sites has been a real focus on something called psychoacoustic architecture. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that term. If anyone's interested in this, this is very much a thread that I've been pulling on in regards to prehistoric past, and it's called psychoacoustic architecture. And this is something specifically in relation to prehistoric megaliths and sacred sites, is the study of purposeful engineering techniques deployed in these structures that manipulate sound waves, producing acoustic effects that are only now being rediscovered by modern science to have profound impact on human consciousness, elevating our coherence levels, increasing brain hemisphere synchronization, neural plasticity, and even potentially access to higher density fields of quantum information. So this is the next generation of quantum biological science, and yet evidence of its usage is represented in the most ancient stone structures littering our world. We're talking precision geometry, aligning massive multi-ton stones into celestial alignments with absolute accuracy. And not just any stones, mind you, very specific stones such as limestone and rose quartz granite, what are known as geoenergetic materials that amplify sound waves and can even produce electrical charge through mechanical stress. And mechanical stress can be applied through acoustical vibration, right? So generating energy, generating electrical behaviors through specific acoustic resonances. And this is not just one site or two sites. This psychoacoustic engineering is found across the world, from my country in England with Stonehenge, to Ireland with Newgrange, to Egypt with many sites, including the pyramids, Malta with the Hypogeum of Halsefleni, one of the best examples, actually, of prehistoric psychoacoustic architecture. And they're in Peru and Mexico and all over the world.
And anybody that goes to these places has mystical experiences, even though they don't believe in God. And that's because it's energetically built on ley lines, where they now know that there's energy coming up out of the core.
Yes.
And so basically, in layman's terms, these things are like a drug temple, but it's not drugs. It's chemically manipulating the neurons in the brain. And like, I'd never even researched this or knew about that part. When I walked up to Stonehenge the first time, there a few times, it was back when you still go up to it the first time, you're not even let you get near it. I walk past this line and feel like ring, and I see this older park ranger, and he goes, yeah, about a third of the people have it. And I sit here and watch people all day walk across that line. And he goes, we think it has something to do with like the rods and cones of people's brains that we all have, same way birds can, you know, follow electromagnetics from where they're born, you know, in North America, you know, down to Central or South America, same thing with hummingbirds or everything. And everybody has these, but he was saying he watches people all day walk across that line, and about 30% of people literally feel it, especially the first time you go across it. I remember just being energized. I'm just like, okay. It was like I walked over a field, and I think that's what you're getting at.
Oh, completely. This is, in my opinion, this is a lost technology of a lost era that we label as the Stone Age. And well, you know, it was the Stone Age, but not how we think about it. It was the age of holistic sciences, of natural energy manipulation, alchemy and shamanism, entangled with mathematics and engineering. And the implications are staggering. I mean, this is something I'll be highlighting in a documentary that I'm working on. I was over at the islands of Malta recently, which is actually an island which has the largest concentration of prehistoric megaliths and temples in the world, alongside indigenous stories of a race of giants that built them, and the discovery of elongated skulls inside the acoustic temples.
We have Genesis in the Bible and all these other ancient texts talking about the giants quite literally. And then the preachers tell us, take it literally, but oh, don't take that literally. Stay right there. I want to come back. You sent us some exclusive video that's coming up in your film soon. We've got a whole list of other areas, not just what we're seeing at the Great Pyramid Giza Complex. Stay right there. Jay Anderson, The Project Unity. We're going to start the next hour and come right back to him in a moment. We'll keep rolling that video. It's all right there in the Old Testament. And giant burning wheels landing and angels walking off and talking to people and giants running around raping the women. And so God decides to destroy life on earth with a cataclysm. And all the other cultures teach it everywhere. All the cultures, the ancient Chinese cultures, the ancient Mesoamerican cultures, the Norse cultures, they all have the same story. They all talk about, before that, flying machines and the gods coming down that looked humanoid. But that's just the Bible. You know, we're not supposed to listen to that. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's difficult to give much more than we've already spoken about because we're all still waiting for this research team to fully publish the findings that they've got in specifics. But they seem confident that there is, in their words, an underground, a vast underground city below the Giza Plateau. So like you said, we're not just talking about engineering structures attached to one pyramid or two pyramids. We're talking about the Giza Plateau itself as potentially a technology or in at least in some capacity, something that is operating as a complete unit. It's not a separate entity. One thing that I want to make clear is I'm not personally involved in the Khafre Pyramid Project. I'm just plugged into this field as a researcher myself, and we're simply reporting on the findings that have been circulating since their conference on the 15th. And also, I did, in my hurried excitement to make this video, make a little bit of a mistake that I would like to correct at the beginning, where the initial studies are the Giza pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Giza, but the secondary studies that are happening now, that is the Pyramid of Khafre. That is the second largest pyramid. And that is the one that is supposedly containing these very strange coil-like structures that are going down potentially 2 kilometers underground. So if you want me to get into it, I can talk a little bit about what we know so far from the team.
Absolutely. And probably first the technology, this ground-penetrating Doppler radar.
Yeah, so they're using something called ultra-high azimuth resolution radar imaging with long Doppler integration. Now, I don't know the full technicalities of this system, but the team claims that they were able to extract precise acoustic information. Their satellite data has been processed via this groundbreaking technique called Doppler tomography, which was developed by a man called Professor Filippo Biande, who, as I said in my video, is one of the research affiliates, and he's an internationally renowned expert in synthetic aperture radar and multi-chromatic tomographic analysis. So just to give people an idea, this methodology, from what we're hearing, apparently enables the creation of 3D reconstructions of subsurface structures, which is what enabled the team to discover what they are claiming to be massive structures extending from the base of the Khafre Pyramid down into the bedrock, like you said, large cylindrical structures with a spiraling design extending over 600 meters down into connecting structures of about 80 meters in diameter. So if this is accurate, obviously it demolishes the current models held by mainstream archaeology and history. And I would argue provides some of the most compelling evidence, like I said, for a pre-dynastic civilization, a pre-flood or pre-cataclysm civilization that, in my opinion, was likely flourishing on this planet around 13,000 years ago, near the end of the last ice age, and before the global cataclysm took place that I think radically reset our entire species. This is all echoes of a past that might have actually been a reality, not just a mythic fable or a folklore. The Sumerian stories of the Anunnaki coming down from the heavens and essentially geoengineering us is what we would understand, geoengineering the planet and engineering humanity to be subservient to them. This is something that I've discussed with some very interesting people, including a man called Dr. Salvatore Pais, who's a U.S. Space Force aerospace engineer and is responsible for some very exotic patents in the classified technology world. He is convinced as well, and many others actually within the intelligence community.
I was told all this by Buzz Aldrin. He said the pyramids are connected to a civilization on Mars,
right?
And that there's a obelisk, that's where they got 2001 from, on the one moon of Mars, and that's Buzz Aldrin telling me this.
I mean, it is hinted in so many different ways throughout the institutions of space exploration, especially in America. NASA loves to kind of flaunt this kind of like reference to the Greek gods. And if you're plugged into the UFO conversation that's been unraveling for the past few years, you know, people like Tom DeLonge, who jump-started that in the public eye, talking to people in the Pentagon, and they're telling him that the Greek gods were real, that they were, you know, a civilization that existed previous to us, that basically left the Earth when there was a cataclysm and has interacted with us throughout time. You know, these are all the kind of stories that we get, whether it's through theology or ufology or simply mythology, that are starting to come together and they start to feel like reality. And I think we're coming to a position in the human story where some very disruptive truths in pretty much every sector you can name, and I know you know this, Alex, because you're plugged into all of these different things, everything is facing major disruption. And I'm very happy to see ancient history and archaeology facing these kind of challenges to the status quo. Because honestly, I actually think that this is so important for our present and our future to understand these implications. Terence McKenna, a fantastic, you know, explorer of psychedelic states and philosophy, would call this the archaic revival. We can call it techno-shamanism. What we're witnessing, in my opinion, in our time, is the resurgence of ancient knowledge being scrutinized by the lens of modern science and forcing our institutions with their established models and their dogmas and their doctrines to acknowledge that we may have been here before. This might not be our first time around the old civilization development block.
I'm just reminded 30, 40 years ago and right through where they would every once in a while let ground penetrating radar helicopters over it, or they'd bring it in and they would find new chambers and they'd shut it down. And then just, why would you not want to discover this? And now as the technology gets stronger, the processing exponentially faster, why? I mean, as you said, what are they going to do as even civilian satellites get so strong and they start finding all this stuff all over the world? I mean, they got a problem. Why do you exactly, think this is coming out now?
I mean, call it natural evolution demanding that we move out of a pattern, because we have been in a rigid pattern in so many different sectors, including archaeology and history. And I would argue that we are just at a place in the evolutionary story where it can't continue. It literally, the weight of evidence, the weight of technological development, like you said, we're able to circumvent the control structures of the previous eras.
Well, you're absolutely right. In the time we have, I'd like to have you back up again with us. You sent us a lot of clips. You've made films. You've done so much research. I know you've already covered some, but what are some of the other really interesting sites? You talked about Eastern Europe, Europe, Russia, China. I know it's come out in the last few decades is like finding all these pyramids and underground temples and destroying them. Why would they not want people to know about that? I mean, it's governments of the world, it seems, really don't want people to look into this.
Yeah, the Chinese are very secretive. I mean, obviously, just in general. But when it comes to their history and their archaeology, they're very secretive. And, you know, there's pyramids out in China that have been found to have mercury rivers of liquid mercury running through them. And you can look this up. This is 100% real. There is a giant pyramid structure in China for an emperor that has rivers of mercury running through it. Now, if you're good with your knowledge on the ancient Vedas and the, you know, scriptures of ancient India, you'll know about the Vimanas, which are the, you know, mythological flying vehicles of these ancient times of ancient India, which were proposed to use things like mercury rotational engines. This was described in ancient Sanskrit texts. And so, you know, yeah, you've got these incredible implications in China. Like I said, in Malta, where I recently came back from, you've got the highest concentration of megalithic sites. And one of them in particular, the Hypogeum, Hypogeum, the Hypogeum of Hal Saflieni. Now, this is a multi-tiered subterranean complex that goes back over 5,000 years into the prehistorical times, probably far older than that. They just don't want to admit it. It's a multi-tier subterranean resonance facility. Okay, it propagates specific harmonics into focal areas of the site. There's a place in this site called the Oracle Room, and this is essentially a focalized area where the harmonics are tuned to 110 hertz, which is a male baritone voice. And it's my opinion that these acoustic resonance chambers were used to enter into quantum states of consciousness. That's not just some science fiction that I'm throwing out there. I've recently interviewed a scientist who's doing breakthrough research in quantum biology, Dr. Stuart Hameroff. You should look into his ideas about quantum
biology. Well, also, all over the Indian temples, some that are 3,000-4,000 years old, they have all this sacred geometry of sound. Yes. And they even have the words explaining what it is. And then now they have those soundboards where you put sand on it and send certain sounds through it. Through a speaker system, and then it forms that exact symbol. So they knew all that.
Yes, this is something that I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's something that fascinates me, especially with this psychoacoustic architecture angle, is that these pyramid complexes, these temple sites, they either encode into the architecture itself or have adorned on them in forms like motifs and, you know, calligraphy and patterns. These cymatics, this is what it's called, the science of sound creating images. Basically, it's the geometric signature of each harmonic oscillation in audio. So when you get a sand plate, like you're showing on this video right now, which I believe is called a Chladni plate, you put some sand on top of this plate and you run a specific acoustic vibration through it. The sand disperses into a specific geometric pattern. You change the frequency, the pattern will change again. What's most interesting about this is that when you look at these patterns, which are being created in the video you're watching right now, they are actually present in all temples and, you know, religions, whether it's monotheistic or otherwise, established or unestablished, rural or, you know, it doesn't matter. These patterns appear everywhere, which means that they were in some way intuiting the same geometries that modern science is discovering. And on top of that, like I said, these temples are tuned acoustically. So it's very clear. It's hiding in plain sight. In fact, some of the best examples are from monotheistic religions like Christianity. If you go to the cathedrals and you go to the churches, you will literally see in the archways the exact patterns of cymatics. It's essentially, when you get into the Freemasons and the stonemasons who built these things and, you know, created the engineering, they were encoding the hidden language of true spirituality into these temples and churches. And that true language of spirituality is vibration and harmonics and energy. Like Nikola Tesla said, if you want to understand the secrets of the universe, you have to think in terms of energy and vibration. And that is what acoustics is.
And we know, especially since the 80s, big media's come in with the corporations and changed the harmonics, changed the frequencies, changed the tuning of everything to what we now know from mainline science depresses people, confuses people. They're literally trying to jam humanity and do the opposite of what the ancients were doing, but to get us to raise our consciousness.
Yeah, that can't be understated. I mean, people might shrug these things off like, oh, okay, yeah, they're changing our moods, they're changing our vibes. Like, no, this is real science. It's established science that different harmonic keys can affect your brainwave, change you from theta to gamma to alpha to beta, make you more compliant, make you happier. I mean, we know this anyway from the most simplest of experiment. Put some headphones on and listen to some music. See how your emotions change. It literally does change how you feel. So when you're being bombarded, which our culture is, from a cellular to a psychological level with noise, then you're not going to be able to tap into these very delicate conscious states that I think our most ancient ancestors were cultivating. And so, yeah, we're in an uphill battle against our own innate natural capacities, because our society is the complete opposite of encouraging the growth of those capacities.
It's satanic. They're trying to keep us in lower frequency so they can influence in that frequency, and they know it, and it's a big joke, and they're throwing it in our face. Very impressive.
But they're not going to win, Alex. They're not getting there, man, because we're the ones that are actually going to break through and make these realizations happen. You know, it's happening every single day. People are waking up every single day. And, you know, you're playing such a major role in that. I mean, my God, I tip my hat to you.
Appreciate you, brother. I want to get you back on. Anytime you've got breaking news, contact us. I want to get you back on soon. Jay Anderson, the Project Unity on X. God bless you.